Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Adam Benjamin, who is the CEO and co-founder of Stark Marketing. Stark Marketing has worked with Fortune 500 companies like Mattel and Barbie to startups at the beginning of their journey. And today we're going to be discussing Adam's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Adam.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So, you know, what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
You know, honestly, I just really love the grind. I think one thing I've learned early in my life about myself is I like the process of building things. You know, when I was starting my career, I worked a number of jobs, you know, for fantastic companies. And, you know, as the companies grew and stabilized, I found myself becoming less interested in the work. And, right. You know, I was always entrepreneurial as a kid. I was always selling things. I was always starting something or the other. But, yeah. You know, I started my career in the early 2000s, you know, which makes me a dinosaur in this world. But around, you know, 2003, 2004, it wasn't yet cool to be an entrepreneur. You know, the mental track that people were on was, you know, go to college and you get a job and you work that job. And, you know, so for me, just coming out of the family that I came out of, that's what I just anticipated I would do for the rest of my life. But I found myself becoming, you know, more and more dissatisfied with the things that I was doing, even though I had the opportunity to work for many fantastic companies. And I just realized, you know, as I've gotten older and as I've reflected over my past, that I like building things, you know, so Working in the agency world is perfect for me because not only do we get to scale and build our own companies, but we get to scale and build so many other companies as well, right? Like with every one of our clients that comes in, you know, we feel like we're a partner in that business and I get that entrepreneurial business rush, you know, from seeing them grow from infancy to, you know, wherever they end up.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And one of the really cool things about working in digital marketing as well is oftentimes you're exposed to so many different industries as well. So it's always keeping things fresh and interesting. You get to learn about so many different industries. Always keeps you on your toes.
100%.
So how did you originally get into digital marketing?
That's a really good question. You know, honestly, it sort of happened by accident. You know, when I started my career, I was in management and in sales, you know, and as we progressed, I found myself in the entertainment industry, you know, working for different record labels and consulting for others. And this was right around, you know, the mid 2000s, 2006, 2007, when social and Facebook was first, you know, taking over the world for the first time, you know, after MySpace. And it was right around the time that we all collectively started to understand that we could leverage this for business in ways that we had not done in the past, right? So I started just by working with several of the musicians that we were working with at different labels saying, okay, this is everything we're doing on the promotional front. This is what the label is doing for you. However, there's ways for you to utilize your own channels to increase your brand and increase your exposure. And this, you know, sort of opened a light bulb for me because I started to realize, you know, there's so much that people can do independently in this new world outside of the business infrastructure that can drive just insane results. And we saw that happen between, you know, 2006 to 2010, and then, you know, Twitter and, you know, Instagram coming a little bit later. You know, it was just sort of a natural progression from understanding, okay, here's how you use social in a very small way to organically increase your brand and your presence, to saying, you know, this is a massive tool for business. So it was a really organic progression, you know, to be honest. It wasn't something that I anticipated. It happened naturally because we were looking to solve problems for different clients and brands and entertainers that we were working with. And, you know, one thing led to another, and here we are.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So when you were working in the entertainment industry, was that, you know, Stark Marketing in the early days, or was that you were working for another company at that time?
Yeah, no, that was just me. You know, that was just me. It was, I was employed by, you know, different record labels and production houses. And then I went into consulting. And, you know, as time passed, organically, I had different companies and brands, you know, reaching out to me looking for help, because, you know, that was the time where the agency space wasn't as saturated as it is today. And people were looking for voices of influence who understood that space, right? So I started consulting for different brands and clients and companies, and I realized a lot of the skills and strategies that we were applying to entertainers crossed over to businesses and brands, you know, as well. The content changes, the funnel changes, the flow changes, the value props change, but the medium is the same, right? Like the formula was extremely similar. Yes. So it was a natural progression over to brands. And, you know, with my background and my experience in marketing and sales, my brother has experience in, you know, software and development and org psych. And we always wanted to start our own company together. We just never knew what it was. And I remember him, his wife, me, my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, we were vacationing in San Diego. And him and I were chatting, and we were like, you know what, we should do this. You know, like, it's the perfect fit. Like, you have the skills on one side, I have the skills on the other. Yep. And, you know, it sort of ruminated for a couple of years. And one day we just decided, now's the time. And, you know, I called him up and I said, I'm resigning today. And he said, what? You know, I said, yep, let's do it. It's time. And he was like, okay. And he resigned a month later. And, you know, at that point, it was just the two of us, and we grew from there.
That's so interesting. And then, so, you know, in those early days, it can be really scary taking that leap. How did you bring on those first few clients, or did you already have, you know, some clients sort of lined up, ready to go from when you were doing consulting?
Yeah. You know, we already had clients. So Julia, you know, Rich and I sort of went at it a different way. You know, Rich is more risk adverse than I am. I'm a little bit more prone to risk, but also, you know, I'm not as risk adverse. I don't have the risk tolerance that some do, you know, especially with their personal lives. And both of us with young families, it was, you know, important for us to maintain that stability.
Yeah.
So we, you know, for a year before we both went full time, we had our 9-to-5 jobs, and then we had our 5-to-9 jobs, you know, and our 5-to-9 was building the agency. So we leveraged the income that we were making, you know, from our jobs, which are good jobs that are paying as well. We cut back our lifestyles, you know, got rid of fancier cars and, you know, cut down on expenses and really put away money, because it was important to me to have financial stability as we launched the agency. Because, you know, when you don't have financial stability, it can lead to bad decision making, right? Like, you make decisions out of fear and insecurity and the rest of it. So we had a handful of clients, and there was just a year period where we were working like crazy. You know, we were working our full-time jobs, and then we were going over and above, you know, on off hours to build the agency. So we started with some stability.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I love that. And yeah, that first year is definitely, it's going to be tough, but I love that you know, you just put in the work, you put in the time, and you were able to then transition out of your full-time job and make the agency happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So, you know, fast forward to today, what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've grown your agency?
You know, I mean, that's a really good question. There's so many, right? But if I had to think through, you know, some of the probably the biggest challenges that have helped us to grow to the point where we are today, it's probably, I would probably boil it down to two things. One, agencies often find themselves in the position of, like, it's like the old, like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? Like, do you hire for what you need before you need it? Or do you get the client and then struggle to do the work and then risk not being able to retain the client, right? So yeah. That was something that we had to navigate early. You know, we realized that, like, as we were expanding, we were great on the sales end, but we needed to, you know, be equally as great on the execution end when it came to delivering for our clients, because a lot of agencies get into that hamster wheel where they acquire clients, but then they can't keep the client, so they lose the client. They never grow because they're just constantly going through that cycle. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, you know, we just leveraged our tenacity and our willingness to work, you know, endless hours in order to be able to deliver for our clients. But we realized that that was not sustainable over the long run, you know. Right. So we started to hire. We took the chance on hiring the right people before we needed them in order to be able to increase our capacity and still deliver, you know, the value that we want to deliver to our clients, which increased our retention rate. The second, you know, sort of like big obstacle that we had to overcome was our customer acquisition process. You know, when we first started off, you know, it was just the two of us, but quickly we got to, I don't know, within a couple of years, we got to, I think, 7 or 8 probably at that time. And when it was just the two of us, you know, we were doing a lot of cold outreach, direct sales. And when you're doing that, you don't need a whole lot of wins for it to make sense when it's just a couple of people. When it starts to get to 6, 7, 8, now the wins that you need are significantly greater in order to be able to sustain that model, right? And we just realized that we were going to need to transition our customer acquisition process. So we started putting together a paid advertising budget, changing, you know, the channels that we were going after and where we were, you know, promoting ourselves. And transitioning to something that was more stable and more sustainable.
Okay, interesting. So now how do you bring in most of your leads into your agency?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we do a lot of inbound, you know, we do a lot of inbound work. We spend a ton of money in paid advertising, you know, so we generate a lot of leads that way. And we still do cold outreach, direct sales and prospecting, you know. So we have a business development team that, you know, focuses on, you know, a couple of people focus on warm and hot leads that are coming in inbound. And we have two people who are just purely focused on prospecting, finding companies that we believe are a good fit for us and going to them with ideas and strategies to try and entice them and see, you know, if there's a good fit between us and them.
Okay, very good. And then, so I know you have a background in sales.
Yep.
So I'm curious. So when the leads come in, what does your process look like for closing those prospects?
Yeah, that's a great question. So depending what the lead is, you know, and maybe let me take a quick step back. So at Stark, we have, you know, media is probably about, you know, 40 to 50% of our business, which is, you know, podcast advertising, radio, television, connected TV, programmatic, you know, everything that's encapsulated in the media world. And the other 50% of our business is probably split between pure digital advertising, marketing strategy, consulting, and then design and creative, right? Like, so depending on what the lead is, whether it's media or, you know, advertising or design, it would go to different people. From that point, our goal is to get on the phone. You know, we want to get on the phone with our clients. We work via email, but, you know, marketing and advertising is nuanced. And you really need to be able to have the discussions to understand what it is that you're promoting, pitching, and suggesting. So I tell our sales team all the time, I say, while technically sales is the word attached with you, you need to think of yourself as a consultant. Because when you're in the marketing and advertising world, you don't just sell one thing, right? If you work for a company that sells a specific product, whatever the problem that person has, your solution is that specific product, right? Whereas on the marketing and advertising side, the products and services that you are suggesting are going to change drastically based on the needs of the client, the vertical of the client, and the stage that client is in their business journey, right? Like you can have two clients in the same vertical that have completely different paths forward just based on where they are in their business. So, you know, our team is trying to understand the needs of the client, what it is you're trying to fix. Oftentimes clients will come to you with their perceived problems, mm-hmm. but there's an underlying issue that they're trying to solve subconsciously that they may not be realizing, right? Like, so a client may come and say, I want to rebuild my website. What they're really saying is like, I'm not getting enough sales, you know, but they've identified the website as the problem. Our goal at Stark is to really get to the root issue and the reason that client contacted us, because then we're really able to analyze and prescribe solutions moving forward that we think make sense, rather than just saying, okay, let's run Facebook ads, or let's run TikTok ads, or let's create video content, or, you know, et cetera.
Okay. So is your team, you know, the sales members of your team, are they, you know, asking, you know, lots of questions so that they can be uncovering that need with the prospects then?
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, yeah. So we are huge on discovery here at Stark. You know, it's like that old adage of like, what is it? Measure, you know, once, you know, instead of, you know, measure 10 times, cut once, rather than, you know, the opposite, you know? So for us, you know, we want to deeply understand not just, you know, what it is you want, but what we think the issue is and the rest of it. And, you know, I'll be honest, sometimes this can frustrate clients, you know, so it's extremely important for us to explain exactly why it is we're trying to dive so deep when you called with a simple request. But, you know, we want to do our best, you know, for our clients. It's not dissimilar to a doctor, right? Like, you can walk in and say, hey, give me X drug, but the doctor is not going to do that. The doctor wants to know exactly what you're feeling, you know, why you think you need this and the rest of it. So ultimately, like, we're focused on delivering results and end goal, you know, and not just looking at things at base value.
Yeah. And I think when a prospect comes to you and they just have, you know, a simple question, I think it's so smart to really delve in and, you know, uncover more pain points, because then you can really position yourself as an expert, especially if they're, you know, shopping around, maybe they're shopping around for like a certain price or whatever. But yeah, you really want to get them talking and just, you know, open that conversation up.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely. So with your sales team, do you, you know, is it something that you guys are constantly studying and, you know, expanding on your sales process? Like, do you guys like go as far to do like role play or anything like that with your sales team? What does that look like?
We do role playing probably once a week. I would say almost every Monday during sales meeting, we do some level of role playing. Some of it is like full conversations and you know, pitches. Other times it's just situational, right? Like where we'll just choose a specific situation and, you know, we'll go through it. You know, we'll do these things where, you know, we call it convince me I'm wrong. And I will just take a position and play devil's advocate for as long and as hard as I possibly can, just to be able to harden and battle test, you know, our sales team to all of those different scenarios. So yeah, role-playing is an essential part of what we do here.
That's really cool, because yeah, it's one thing to be, you know, studying objection handling or, you know, all the different elements that go into sales. But, you know, if you're not practicing it, then you're not being as effective as you could be.
Without a doubt. And, you know, and ultimately like objection handling and understand having to disarm and, you know, all of these things that, you know, they're great, but the most important part is product knowledge, right? Like you have to deeply understand what it is you do. You have to deeply understand what it is you're selling. And if you can combine, you know, product knowledge at just an expert level with all of the different sales techniques, like how to overcome objections and the rest of it, that's where you become truly powerful. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of like entry level salespeople. And I found myself in this position too, when I first started my career, is I was focusing very heavy on the sales parts of getting good rather than deeply understanding the product, right? So I would read the books from, you know, all the old guys who you would probably know, you know, all the books that, you know, are constantly in circulation. And I would focus on how to overcome objections, how to disarm, all the rest of it. But I wasn't focused enough on deeply understanding the product, you know? Yeah. So over here, we really try and combine the two. You know, I tell them all the time, I said, you know, you can be great at all of the different sales techniques, but if you aren't an expert at the subject matter, it really doesn't matter. You know,
yeah.
Whereas when you deeply understand the subject matter of advertising and marketing and business, and then you also combine that with proper sales techniques, that's where you truly elevate your status as a salesperson.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. What are there any, you know, common objections that you hear, you know, that, you know, time and again?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's so many objections, but I think it all boils down to credibility and price, right? Like when it comes to a client person, and I get it, you know, I mean, clients are being sold and pitched and, you know, if they've contacted us, they've likely contacted four other people too. So they're trying to vet, you know, who is the right person. Now, obviously for us, there's certain just infrastructure things that we need in place that establish our credibility, reviews, a good website, you know, marketing materials, case studies, you know, endorsements and, you know, such and such. But after that, the customer is trying to figure out like, who are these people? Can I trust what they're telling me? And do they have the ability to do what I need, right? Like mm-hmm. that's what they're subconsciously trying to vet. So generally, whatever objection they're asking, you know, that's what it comes down to. And that's what you're trying to solve. And then the flip side is price. But if you can solve the first one, oftentimes the second one is no longer an issue because business people are smart. You know, people who run businesses and work in business are smart. And ultimately, if they think that we can solve what they need, price is no longer an issue. However, if we're not able to overcome that credibility gap, now price becomes the central focus of the conversation.
Right. Yeah, that makes so much sense. So I'm curious, do you guys ever, you know, bring on clients that have been burned before by other digital marketers in the past? Is that something that you guys have encountered?
Always.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Super common.
Always super common.
So how do you build trust with those people, with those clients quickly?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the biggest thing for us is we give it to them straight. You know, there's not a lot of side talk. I love nothing more than telling a client something will not work because it shows that I have investment in their business, right? Like
yeah.
To me agencies, they just, you know, essentially it's like they take marching orders from the client, then they're off in that direction. But, you know, it goes back to what I said earlier. You know, the client may say a certain thing is a problem, but there's an underlying problem they're always trying to solve, you know? So when we look at things, we do not look at what is going to keep the client happy or make the client happy with us or the rest of it. We look at things really objectively and we're looking at it through the lens of, is this going to deliver the results that the client needs, you know? So
yeah.
For us, we believe in honesty in conversation. We believe in authenticity and integrity in mm-hmm. what we're promoting. And we've lost clients because of this. You know, there's been clients who have come and we have not been aligned, you know, in what we think the path forward is. And in those situations, we will tell the client that, you know, we think you guys are a fantastic company. We love the product. We love what you do. But we don't think this is going to be successful. And this is not something that we can be a part of. Because 6 months and, you know, $200,000 later, you're going to be really upset with us, you know, and we're going to say, I told you so, but it doesn't matter, you know, because ultimately, if we sign up and we are on this path with you, we have to be aligned with what the mission is and the direction forward, right?
Yeah.
So I think the frankness of those conversations naturally build trust with our clients. And being aligned in the, you know, direction that we're heading also builds trust because if we're not aligned, we don't do it.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that you're just able to have that radical transparency with your clients and set realistic expectations with them from the start, because I think that's such a huge part of maintaining happy clients is just setting those realistic expectations and making sure that communication is dialed in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, where do you see Stark Marketing in 5 years' time?
Well, you know, we have huge growth ambitions. You know, we've grown pretty quickly already. But, you know, it's a good question, you know, and it's a funny one because if you had asked me that 5 years ago, we would probably be in a very different direction, you know, as far as what I would have said 5 years ago from where we actually are, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I never imagined we would be as big as we are in the media world as we are now. And, you know, we're competing with agencies that are, you know, 20 times bigger than us. And we're brokering deals, you know, with major people like, you know, Colin Cowherd and, you know, UFC fighters and, you know, all of these massive hosts, you know, so it's hard for me to say where we're going to be 5 years from now, but I'm excited for it. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. So your goal is just to grow, you know, as much as possible while not sacrificing, obviously, any of the quality of your work. But yeah, that's very exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, to that point, Julia, it's, you know, we actually do not have ambitions of becoming one of the largest agencies in the country or, you know, things of that nature. Whereas 5 years ago, I would have said that, you know, I would have said we wanted to be, you know, the top agency in the country. I think what I love about our company is I love that we have a boutique feel to the way we work. And mm-hmm. I love that we have quality control across departments, right? When your agency grows past a certain size, you essentially just become a collection of lots of small agencies. You know, you have independent teams and pods that really are their own independent agency. Whereas mm-hmm. right now, you know, when a client comes into Stark, you really are leveraging the experience and the talent of every single person at the company from top to bottom. You're not, you know, getting a certain number of people if you're a big client and a certain number of people if you're a small client. Everybody gets the best of our abilities. And once you scale past a certain point, that is just no longer feasible or possible. You know, it's not practical to do that. So what ends up happening is certain clients get top tier talent within the agency, other clients get lower tier talent, and so on and so forth. So I never want to grow past the point where that becomes, you know, the direction that we head in. But I think there is massive room for growth even currently before we get anywhere close to that point from where we are now.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Because you never want to get to that point where you're sacrificing the quality of the work that you're able to give your clients. So it's awesome that you've, you know, had that insight or foresight to think ahead and make sure that that's not going to become the case.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, you know, we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but is there any, you know, final words you'd like to share with our listeners or, you know, words of wisdom that you'd like to share with any agency owners who may be listening?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to any agency owners that may be listening, I think, you know, from my own personal experience is, you know, the biggest focus needs to be on delivering for the client. And your agency will grow as a byproduct of that, you know, early on. And it's natural, right? It's natural to think about your company, your livelihood. And that's all we did was think about how do we acquire clients? How do we bring money in and how, you know, the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, at the beginning of this, I told you like one of the biggest obstacles that we had to overcome was as we were scaling up, how do we get off that hamster wheel and deliver for our clients so that we retain clients? And it took a mentality shift for us to say, okay, we're going to get razor focused on really delivering for our clients. And if we do that, good things will come, you know? Yeah. And that's what we did. You know, we sort of took a leap of faith. We hired the right people. We paid more than we probably could have afforded at that point. Richard and I, as co-founders of the company and owners of the company, you know, our staff probably doesn't even know this, but there was a few years in there where most of them were making a lot more money than we were, you know, because we made the intentional decision to say, we're going to sacrifice for the betterment and the benefit of the company. We're going to deliver for our clients. And that's going to take us cutting back on what we get from the business so that we can bring on the right people to deliver for our clients. And if we can do that, everything will work out, you know, and it has. Whereas I see, you know, too often with younger agency owners or people who are just getting started, you know, the focus is all client acquisition. And there isn't enough of a focus on delivering.
Yeah. I think that's so smart to just make that your main focus is delivering results to your clients, because, you know, happy clients at the end of the day are going to renew those contracts, those retainers with you. And they're also going to refer you out to other people and bring on more work into your agency. So I love that.
Yeah. 100%.
Awesome. Well, we are going to move on to the fast five now. So I've got five rapid fire questions for you. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
So it's an older book, but I just read Shoe Dog by Phil Knight.
I love that book.
Yeah. Founder, and oh my goodness, that book is incredible. You know,
so cool.
You know, I mean, you've talked a lot about sales today, and I was like, that guy is a salesperson to the core, right? Like,
yeah.
So many people don't know that. Like, when he, you know, it was Blue Ribbon Sports before it was Nike, and he just came up with that name in a meeting, you know, because they asked him, what's your company name, when he was meeting with a manufacturer in Japan. He didn't have a company, and he just popped out with Blue Ribbon Sports, you know, and just sort of built from there. And, you know, it's like, you realize, even for Nike and Phil Knight, I mean, he's just faking it till he makes it, right? And then he made it. And so many good lessons. Couldn't recommend that book enough for any business person, entrepreneur, agency owner, etc.
I know, especially anyone who's going through difficult times, because I didn't realize how many times they were so close to going under, you know, how many times they were just so close to going bankrupt. And he just kept powering through it and was able to grow, you know, the mega successful brand that we know now is Nike. So cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So next question, what does your morning routine look like?
You know, I don't have a very complicated morning routine. You know, I used to just sort of like get started right away. I've realized that I like my mornings, and I'm a potterer, and I like to ease into my day. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I do when I wake up is I check email. Even before I get out of bed, I check my email just to see what's happened from the last time I checked email, and, you know, make sure everything's under control. Mm-hmm. I take a look at my calendar. And then, you know, after you brush your teeth and shower and the rest of it, I have my morning coffee, and then I get to my workday. You know, I don't, except for very rare exceptions, I will not schedule a meeting before 10 a.m. You know, 10 a.m. is, even my team knows, you know, like, unless it's important, do not schedule anything before 10 a.m. because I like to get into the workday before actually starting meetings and phone calls and all the rest of it. Yeah. Get through my email, organize the rest of my day, and then off to it.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. Plus, meetings can sometimes, I know I can sometimes feel really drained after a meeting, and like the morning is definitely when I'm most productive. So I like to strategically schedule when I do certain tasks.
Absolutely.
Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
You know, honestly, there is not. I pay attention to a lot of them. You know, mm-hmm. I pay attention to a lot of marketing people, but I will not say that there is one specific CEO that I, you know, follow and study. You know, I'm constantly, you know, I'm a news junkie, so I'm always reading the news, business, politics, and otherwise. And I take lessons, you know, from different things that people do. I also find, Julia, that, you know, a lot of the CEOs that are extremely prominent, you know, and I won't say any names, but they're at a very different stage in business than I am. You know, and a lot of the lessons that, you know, they preach, they preach for Fortune 100 companies, you know, and we're not a Fortune 100 company. And, you know, so there isn't always direct crossover from certain, you know, lessons and the rest of it. So, yeah, I pay attention to all of it, but I wouldn't say that there's one who I follow over anyone else.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, someone like Elon Musk, the issues he's encountering in his business are going to be, you know, just so different from the average entrepreneur out there. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And what is your favorite online tool?
My favorite online tool is definitely Slack.
Awesome.
I use Slack constantly, you know, I'm sure, you know, a lot of your listeners do, but it became really big for us during the pandemic when we all went to work from home, you know, and left our offices. And now there's just no going back. You know, Slack is probably the number one tool I use 24/7.
Awesome. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I wish I had known that everyone is just trying to figure it out. You know, when I began my career, I looked up to certain people who were in certain positions, and I thought they had all the answers. And, you know, we've been extremely lucky at Stark to work with some really, really fantastic companies from, you know, Fortune 100 companies like Mattel and so on, all the way to like startups. I've seen startups go from, you know, 10 million to 120, 170 million in 2.5, 3 years, you know? And, you know, I know their CEOs and I know their CMOs and the rest of them, and they're all really smart, driven, motivated people, but they don't have all the answers. They're problem solving. They're just constantly problem solving. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of my career, you know, that was not something that I realized. I thought that, you know, the people who were successful and in the positions that I wanted to be in had the answers. And what I've learned is nobody has the answers, and everyone is just trying to figure out the answers for the stage in business that they're at. And the better job you do at that, the better job you do at growing your company.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such great advice. And yeah, I think the better you can get at problem solving and figuring out exactly what problems are the important problems to solve to get to where you want to get to, is definitely something that is it doesn't come second nature to anyone when they're first starting out in business. So it's definitely, definitely a great tip.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Adam. It was a pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.